Last month, the DeKalb County Commission voted to relocate the monument that's currently in Decatur Square. But that process to take down the monument may be harder in Georgia than it is in pretty much any other state. With me now is the state senator for Decatur, Elena Parent. Hello there.
Hi.
And also with us for this entire hour is Andra Gillespie. She's a professor of political science at Emory University. Welcome back, Andra.
Thank you.
Elena, I mentioned a moment ago this Georgia state law that's more than 100 years old saying that you can't move any marker to a war except under certain circumstances. What are the circumstances under which you can remove a monument like this?
Well, the state law is a little confusing, Celeste, because it's got several subparagraphs and different parts of the statute apply to different entities. So one of the things that I've been trying to tease out and the DeKalb County attorney and many others have been thinking about over this time is what part actually applies to actions taken by local governments. Here we have a 30-foot obelisk that's under discussion in DeKalb County. It is, again, it had to be researched, but it is owned by DeKalb County, and DeKalb County is a local government. That means DeKalb County's options are different than if the monument was owned by the state, for example.
I see. But at this point, we don't actually have the answer to how you go about either moving it or removing it, right?
Well, the DeKalb County attorney, O.V. Brantley, did issue a legal memorandum saying that in her analysis that I have gotten a semi-agreement out of our legislative council at the General Assembly on, that DeKalb County could relocate the monument or contextualize it. However, it cannot be removed. So if it were relocated, it
removed would, and just disappeared.
Correct. It cannot disappear. It cannot be covered. If it is relocated, it would have to go somewhere that where the public could go see it.
Andra, take us back in time to when this law was passed. Again, we're talking quite some over 100 years ago. Why did they need a law protecting these? The law protects any marker, but really we're talking about Confederate memorials. Why did we need it?
Well, I mean, it's in part, historians talk about this and are probably in a better position to be able to answer the question. But when they put these monuments up, they went up with great fanfare. And they were expected to be preserved to try to reinforce the nostalgia of the lost cause. And so this is a nice way to say that even if this falls out of favor in future generations, that this is, you know, you can put these laws in and then you have to deal with them forever so that, you know, their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren have fewer options about how to deal with them. I mean, you know, and one of the things that's actually really interesting about this time period, not just with respect to Confederate monuments, but with respect to voting rights and other things, because so this is what historians call the nadir of African-American history, was that a lot of the laws that were made were facially neutral. The 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were real things. They knew that they, on their face, had to provide equal protection to African Americans. But yet they came up with all of these really interesting laws that were then supported by the Supreme Court that on their surface weren't necessarily explicitly racist in their nature, but had the effect of having the exact same impact.
I want to actually play a little bit of tape for you. Now, this is not the markings from the Decatur Monument. This is actually what is engraved on the Augusta Confederate Monument, which is 76 feet tall, commissioned by the Ladies Memorial Association, and that was dedicated in 1876. Now, here is a portion of the inscription on that monument.
Worthy the fadless fame which Confederate soldiers lost, who gave themselves in life and death for us, for the honor of Georgia, for the rights of the states, for the liberties of the South, for the principles of the Union, as these were handed down to them. By the fathers of our common country, no nation rose so white and fair, none fell so pure of crime.
Our Confederate dead. Now, I don't remember exactly what the one in Decatur says, but it's really similar.
It is.
Very similar. Mm-hmm. And I emphasize the part where it says, no nation rose so white and fair, none fell so pure of crime. What kind of complaints have you gotten, Elena?
Right. The Decatur one does say something similar. After 42 years, another generation bears witness to the future that these men were of a covenant keeping race who held fast to the faith, on and on. So, right. Again, mentions sort of a similar thing. And this one was erected in 1908. And this was right around the time of the Atlanta race riots. So this one appears to have been erected. And, you know, a lot of these are right by courthouses. Mm-hmm. So that gives the significance is it's a message. The law applies differently to you. We celebrate this sort of superiority of the white race. And you can see that in both of those inscriptions.
Now, Andre, you specialize in political science. And here we have a bit of a tension between local control, which is very often a conservative catchphrase, and the protection of monuments. How did in many cases, the same political side that believes in states' rights, right, mm-hmm. and local control of government also be preventing municipalities from changing something in their own community?
Well, the tension between state government and national government is one thing, and so that's what we, you know, consider and argue about a lot in federalism. But local government exists at the pleasure of state government. And so that relationship is a little bit different. And so local government is dependent on state government. And I think it's also important to kind of keep in mind here is that by having state laws, it actually does provide local communities cover when they want to do certain things. So for instance, if you have a group of people, a vocal minority, maybe even a majority of people who want to get rid of a monument, then the local government can throw up their hands and say, well, we're kind of tied and constrained by state government and state statute that's there. And so I think it's really important to keep in mind, you know, one of the reasons why historically African Americans have tended to pursue the federal government for redress, why African Americans in particular tend to feel more confident in federal government than in state and local government, was that state and local government worked hand in hand to perpetuate discrimination, to enact Jim Crow laws. And so it's not surprising that there would be this tension. The tension exists now because of different types of politics, and especially a city like Decatur, a blue city and a red state. But, you know, back in the day, state and local government worked hand in hand to perpetuate white supremacy.
Let me play you, Elena, a comment. This is from a retired Episcopal priest here in Georgia, Father Lewis Bowler, and he's talking about the monument. Actually, he's referring specifically to the one in Augusta, but it's an argument you've probably heard.
For me, it's okay to remain there. It reminds us of an era that once existed, and we can use it as a stepping stone to not let it happen again, and certainly not as a rallying point for persons who felt in favor of it years ago.
What do you make of this argument that by removing monuments like this or moving them, we are erasing or sanitizing history?
Celeste, I absolutely have heard that viewpoint from both white and black Georgians, and certainly these monuments do have historical value. The problem arises in the sense that there are so many of them, and they are in very important and public places. And so you start to consider, well, do all these you know, the Decatur Town Square, the center of the community, does that really have to be the location for a Confederate monument? Might the community want something else there? Do all of them need to stay? And I think that those are questions that are very important for communities to wrestle with.
So what would you like to do with it? What would you like to, where would you like to move the monument that's in Decatur Square?
You know, I have heard a variety of proposals. One is to move it to the cemetery that's very nearby. There are already the graves of Confederate war dead and soldiers there. But I don't think the city of Decatur necessarily wants it to come onto a Decatur cemetery. The county commission is actually accepting proposals now. And some of the groups that have been interested in seeing the monument be relocated elsewhere have been working with civic groups. The Hate Free Decatur and Beacon Hill NAACP have been sort of soliciting ideas as well, so that there may be a public and willing place that would be appropriate for this monument. I myself think it's something that the local citizens and local government need to work out. And I've remained a little bit more focused on my role in discussing what the state law does and does not allow, and whether we need to make some changes to that state law to allow local governments to actually take action, particularly if we think that some of these monuments don't need to be just relocated, but whether some of them could be removed and something else put up in their place.
In the minute that we have left right now, Andra, is this always a partisan issue? Can we are we supposed to assume that a Republican will support keeping the monuments up and the Democrat will support removing them?
Well, I mean, you know, the potential options are multimodal, so it's not just take them up or remove them.
Right.
There are these intermediate steps about, you know, whether we add additional plaques to them or other types of things. And so, therefore, the distinguishing sort of features kind of vary. So during the Atlanta mayoral election, which is not partisan, but certainly was full of racial polarization, I did surveys trying to figure out sort of who's going to support Keisha Lance Bottoms and who was going to support Mary Norwood. And the modal sort of preference was moving response. And that's true amongst Black and white voters. It's true amongst, you know, more Norwood supporters wanted to, you know, do other things with it. But, you know, the modal response amongst both groups was move.
That is Emory political science professor Andra Gillespie. She's with us this whole hour. Annalena Parent is state senator for Decatur. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.